This is the worst podcast I've ever been on.
These guys are shit.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome, everybody, to a new sparkling edition of the Hard Traveling Fanboys. I am Greg Phillips. With me, as always, is Nick Duke. And we are continuing Walking Dead Month right here in the L-shaped studio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, Ho-Ho Loon Plaza. Nick, how the hell are you today?
I'm okay, I suppose. We are, of course, continuing Walking Dead Month, as you said. And, man, as the weeks go by, I'm just reminded of why I abandoned this franchise long ago.
You're spoiling the episode already, Nick.
I don't care.
What are we doing? We want the people to stick around and listen to our witticisms, right?
If we actually cared about the people sticking around, we wouldn't have opened with 6 minutes on David Lynch, Vince McMahon last week.
I regret nothing about that episode.
Nope.
except that we continued after that bit. that was really the high point. Anyway, but we're not alone tonight. Walking Dead Month is an inclusive thing here at the Hard Traveling Fanboys. We like to bring in our friends and neighbors from across the Place to Be Nation. And one of those individuals just happens to share geographic similarities to me, in that we live in the same apartment complex. He is an individual who is a longtime friend of both myself and Nick. He is the host of the Sunday Groove podcast, and he, like us, has been following The Walking Dead since the show launched on AMC way back when. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring to you, live from somewhere undisclosed, David Sunday. David, welcome to the show.
I got the short hair.
You certainly do. There's a voice you have to premiere on the show once we get going, David.
Okay.
But how the hell are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Well, I'm living it. I'm living it, and it is the life of a hard traveling fanboy. But David, thank you for joining us for Walking Dead Month. Are you as fired up as we are for this event?
I guess so. Yeah.
There's not a lot of enthusiasm here in the studio today, folks, but what we are going to talk to you about is the Season 10 premiere. That's right. Season 10 of The Walking Dead on AMC. AMC, of course, standing for American Movie Classics and not the classic soap opera All My Children. Totally different businesses. Well, the first episode premiered this past Sunday. David and I actually watched it together in my luxurious two-bedroom apartment, bottom floor here in Troy, Alabama. They're in Troy, Alabama, not here. We're in Vancouver, as has already been established. And, Nick, I understand you have also viewed the episode.
I have. I watched it earlier this very day, so coming in fairly fresh.
It's been a couple days for David and I, so we may be a little... David and me, rather. We may be a little rusty on some of the details, but I think I got the majority of it, which is breathing and having Southern accents.
Mm-hmm.
The episode title is Lines We Cross. It is episode 132 of The Walking Dead, directed by Greg Nicotero, written by Angela Kang, and it drew a 4.0 rating for AMC on Sunday night. So, with all that said and done, last season of The Walking Dead was an interesting one. We had the flash forward of about 5 years, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And if I am, just tweet at JRsBBQ and let me know how wrong I am. And Nick abandoned ship halfway through last season. He wrote off The Walking Dead, and David and I soldiered on and watched the rest of the season and ended up being rewarded with what I think was one of the better stretches of Walking Dead episodes in some time. For me, it kept me enthused and kept me interested in the show, or actually brought my interest back in the show after the last season and a half had pretty much beaten it out of me. I thought the Whisperers were pretty well handled at the end of last season, so I came into this premiere with a little bit of excitement. What about you, David? What were your thoughts coming out of last season and kind of getting ready for this premiere episode?
I was pretty excited. I tried to keep my expectations low because of how seasons, 8 and 7 and 8 or something like that were. But, I mean, I had the expectations. Last season definitely got better as it went on. But I didn't really know what to expect, honestly. I'd forgotten a lot of stuff.
Yeah, me too.
I enjoyed the second half, but I definitely forgot a ton of it.
Same here. I had that same problem when the show started. I couldn't remember who exactly had been killed in the climactic episode of last year. There were a lot of deaths. I don't think it's spoiling anything to say that. A lot of characters wiped off the table. And for those who haven't watched last season, we will be having spoilers during this episode about the status quo. So be prepared. If you're planning on watching season 9 and haven't, better just skip to the second half of this episode. But I'm like you, David. I forgot a lot of stuff coming out of last year. But Nick, what about you? You didn't have any context for the flash forward portions of The Walking Dead. What was your status going into this season premiere? Did you understand what the status quo was? Were you utterly and completely baffled? What was your read on things?
I didn't really know much of what was going on, honestly, because I had not just stopped watching. I had kind of stopped following altogether. And even last season, last year, whenever you would give your updates on watching it during the show, I would kind of just zone out and play on my phone for a while and not listen to anything you were saying.
Pretty much so, what you do whenever I'm talking during the show.
So that's not true. So yeah, I was largely unaware of pretty much anything that was going on, and I would say willfully unaware. Like I was against the very idea of inserting any more Walking Dead knowledge into my brain. So going into this, it was something I was looking at it as a task I had to do for the show and nothing further. And I have no intention of returning next week.
Mm. Strong words from a strong man, Captain Insano. Well, nonetheless, we did get the episode, and we did watch the episode, and it is picking up months after the climactic events of last season, where the Whisperers, if you will, led, of course, by Whispering Bill Anderson, made their mark known on our group of heroes by wiping out a whole lot of the dead weight from the show, including the much-hated character of Henry, the quite useless character of Tara by that point. Numerous other characters were taken off the board. Enid was killed, much to my chagrin. They wiped... I can't remember who all else got killed, but a whole buttload of characters got killed at the end of last season. And we have yet another fast forward here, although not as much. We're past the winter, the winter that sort of crushed the group and destroyed supplies and led to this big Whisperers confrontation. We're past that, and now the communities seem to be recovered. They're training for combat on the beach now, which is, I thought, a really cool setting, because now that they've kind of embraced Oceanside as one of their communities, it gives you a new setting for The Walking Dead that we haven't seen. I've always wanted to see what the coasts would look like, what the beach would look like, which has really been limited to the video games to this point, as far as I know, of The Walking Dead world that I've been exposed to. So I thought the setting was cool to start out with. The colors were brighter than I was used to. And the groups are trying to sort of recover. They're trying to live their lives and respect the rules that were laid down by the Whisperers about the boundaries that they're not allowed to go past. If they go past a certain line, that's Whisperer territory, and they'll be in trouble and they'll spark a new war. And things seem to be going relatively well, although people are not necessarily happy about things. But I will say the episode starts with a title card that flashes up. And I can't remember exactly what the first title card was, guys. Do either of you remember?
No, no idea.
Something to do with water. I don't remember, like Seaside or something, I think.
If it, whatever it was, it popped up. And I remember I turned to you, David, as we were watching the episode, and I said, oh my God, it's going to be one of those episodes, isn't it? where they're going to try to tell the same span of time from like six different perspectives separated by title cards. Now, they didn't go quite that extreme, but it was like four different perspectives separated by title cards. And what I meant by one of those kind of episodes is, in my opinion, and we talked about this a little bit last week, Nick, sometimes The Walking Dead falls in love with itself a little bit and tries to get really artsy and really, in quotation marks, creative to the detriment of the flow and the pacing of the show. And some of the shots that would take place in this episode felt like they were trying to win an Academy Award or something with unnecessary slow motion, dramatic title card shifts, cliffhangers that take the entirety of an hour and 15 minutes to resolve, from commercial break to commercial break. I just got a bad vibe about this episode from the minute it started. And I hate to say that because there was stuff in this episode I liked, which we'll talk about. But I thought it just got off to a really just stereotypical Walking Dead start with a lot of kind of slow-paced stuff. And, the beach stuff was fine. I like the beach stuff. It's just as soon as they swapped to that next title card and we rewound back to the same point of time that we started the show at, it's like, oh my gosh, this is going to take forever to get through. Nothing's going to happen by the end of this episode. And I think, unfortunately, I was pretty much proven right about that. What are your guys' thoughts?
Fascinating. Sorry, I was waiting to see if you wanted to go first.
Go ahead, David.
Yeah, I didn't like the kind of pretentious rewind thing it would do, but I loved the Seaside stuff. It was kind of cool. And as you point out to me, how bright it was shot,
yeah,
which was unique. Definitely not what we're used to seeing on there.
Yeah, we're used to kind of these muted gray colors and tones on the show. So I thought it was neat to see something different. Although by the end of the episode, it felt like it had kind of gone back to what it usually is. When we go into like Alexandria and everything, it's kind of back to being a little bit darker. But yeah, the vibe of the episode wasn't. It threw me off, and I was thinking, God, I hope they don't go this route. What did you think, Nick? Do you know what I'm talking about when I refer to this sort of artsy cinematic?
Yeah, they're known for doing this from time to time where, you know, rather than providing a well-paced episode, they think that they can do these more slow, ponderous episodes that kind of just dwell on the same very brief series of events over and over again just from different perspectives, which is what we kind of got here. And as someone who came in with relatively little knowledge of who a lot of these characters were, what the status quo was for characters that I did know, this certainly didn't help hold my interest. I'll put it that way. It was glacially paced.
Yes.
And pacing issues were one of the many reasons I stopped watching The Walking Dead. So as I said from the top, and as I said during last week's review of Fear the Walking Dead, I am just being reminded of all the reasons I left this franchise behind me.
At times, it feels like The Walking Dead doesn't really concern itself with audience retention, because one of the just basic rules of television is you want to start strong and end strong. And I feel like Walking Dead too many times starts weak and ends weak, with the best episodes coming in the middle of the season or during the course of the season. And you know, I'm not saying they needed to come out of here and have like guns a-blazing and go right into the war, but they needed to have something as far as pacing and making you feel like your heart was racing better than the group fighting a fire, because that wasn't exciting at all.
No, it wasn't. Not in the least. I can't imagine that they could seriously think this an episode of this structure is the answer to their sagging ratings. And I'm not saying that nobody's watching. 4 million people, as you referenced earlier, but 4 million, by the way, I think is by far the lowest rated season premiere or lowest viewed season premiere they've ever had for The Walking Dead, even below season one numbers. So I don't know.
David, what were your thoughts of Backdraft taking place in the zombie apocalypse?
I was very uninterested and just ready for something to happen, like something. Or go back to some of the characters I love and just, you know, give more time to them, because there were great scenes with some of my favorite characters. But I'm getting ahead of myself, probably.
Well, yeah, I mean that's a great transition, actually, because we do kind of pick up some of our classic Walking Dead characters in new situations. Daryl, for the first time since Beth was taken off the board, seems to be starting a romantic entanglement of some sort. At least he seems to be crushing on, God help me, I should have looked up this character's name. What is the character's name? Connie, I think, is her name. I'm making football announcer noises. Or just a guy that's taking a dump noises. Damn it. What is her freaking name? Connie. Yes. Okay. Yes. She is a member of Magna's group that came in last year, and she is the one that has developed a bond with Daryl, and they seemingly have a little bit of some sexual tension going on, including actually one of the funnier lines in the episode was when she tells Daryl that his sign language is even in a southern accent. That made me chuckle. And so we get them. Carol returns from her voyage to the high seas, and she's got a little awkwardness going on with Ezekiel. And also reconnects with her best buddy Daryl, which was probably my favorite parts of the episode overall, were the Daryl and Carol parts. Eugene is trying to help Sadiq and Rosita and Father Gabriel raise their baby in this odd three men and a woman and a baby situation. And other than that, what's her name? Alpha's daughter is trying to adjust very difficult fashion to her new life in the community. And she's doing so by seemingly striking up a bit of a friendship with Negan, who is now a farmer, an imprisoned farmer.
Good God.
Aaron is around, and he's not really seemingly doing much. He'll probably die this season, unfortunately. And that's pretty much it. Oh, and Michonne is there, and she's kind of trying to figure out what to do moving forward about the Whisperers. She's having debates with Aaron. You got all these disparate groups doing different things, and we're going back and forth, kind of seeing how they're all adjusting. But you mentioned that our favorite characters are your favorite characters, and I think they're pretty much the same as mine. I thought the strengths of this episode, anything with Daryl and Carol was great. All of their scenes were amazing because Melissa McBride and Norman Reedus are great actors. They're both excellent. And I thought, of course, I'm going to save Eugene because I know that's Nick's probably lone shining light of this episode. But how cool was it to see Daryl and Carol together just palling around again?
Oh, it's excellent. That's definitely the best part of the episode. Well, second best part of the episode, and I could have used extended. That seemed to be extended a little bit in place of the fire.
Yes, Carol. Of course, the big kind of, I guess what's supposed to be the cliffhanger of the episode is that Carol and Daryl go beyond the border a little bit, and they look off into the distance, and Carol makes eye contact with Alpha, and as you know, Alpha sent her daughter into the group last season. So now Carol and Alpha appear to be on a collision course, if that scene was to be believed. Mm-hmm. And but of course we didn't get much from Alpha in this episode, because nothing, as Nick alluded to, nothing really happened in this episode. They fought a fire. Oh, a satellite now crashes from the sky for reasons that we're what, guys? We're like 7, 8, 9 years into the zombie apocalypse at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And 10, I guess, maybe, I don't know how far we are into it. and a satellite just now falls out of the sky into and crashes down to Earth. I guess maybe.
Yeah, satellites have decaying orbit paths, so I mean it's not inconceivable, but it is a bit contrived and silly.
And it crashes right next to our group.
Yeah, and on the topic of Daryl and Carol, before you move on,
sure.
As I told Greg earlier, it seems as if when I last watched the show, Carol was done with people, and in one season, she's re-embraced people and is now done with people again. So I'm glad to see they are retreading the same ground that they always are with Carol and Morgan, because it's the only character arc they really know how to write for either of these two characters. So glad to see that's a continuing
trope. At least
this time
she had a good reason for disengaging with people, because her boy
for the seventh time in 10 seasons.
Her boy got his head lopped off, you see. And put on a
pike.
He did deserve it. I'm not denying that. Henry was drizzling shits, in my opinion. But that's just my opinion. I could be wrong. If we have any Henry fans out there, please let us know why you were Henry fans. What did he do to deserve to be to have your fandom? Carol has gone through another one of her many, many off-season, off-camera shifts in character. But it looks like she'll be sticking around, motorcycle that just drove by, on the show moving forward. So that's good. They're dropping left and right. Father Gabriel continues to not be interesting at all. I can't wait.
So tell me how this works. Negan is apparently a prisoner who's forced to pick tomatoes.
Yes.
In terms of his labor. And yet he can just summon Father Gabriel, who is supposedly one of the leaders of the community now, to his cell at any moment.
Yes, because Father Gabriel is an idiot.
To give him a lecture about shitting pants.
Yes, because Father Gabriel is an idiot, and they have to have a reason for Negan to be on the show because he's entertaining. So Negan comes in and talks about shit and pants, which was funny. It was a good monologue, but again, Father Gabriel is useless. He has no point. I don't understand. Half the time, it's just him. It's just an excuse for them to show that he has a fake eye, and you know, vaguely looks like Hair Star. You know, it's not good. Luckily, Sadiq is there, and he's having flashbacks to the Whisperers. So that's that, I suppose. But let's talk about the real reason to talk about these characters. Two real reasons. Number one is the lovely Christian Serratos is back as Rosita Espinosa. One of the reasons to continue watching for me. And then let's talk about our boy, arguably the MVP of this episode, given how little screen time he got, Josh McDermott's Eugene Porter.
Yeah, our boy. No. Because back when I was still watching the show, I had to defend the honor of Dr. Eugene Porter on a weekly basis, because you always were casting aspersions on the character. So there is no way I'm going to sit here and listen to you call him our boy. While I may have left the show behind, Dr. Eugene Porter still is and forever will be my boy, not our boy. You, sir, deserve no ownership of Dr. Eugene Porter.
Well, you can have Dr. Eugene Porter, because I'm talking about Mr. Eugene Porter, because there is no Dr. Eugene Porter. He's not a doctor.
For God's sake. He was performing scientific experiments on the baby. He was trying to make sure that Rosita's lactation was going properly. He was doing lots of things for the sake of science.
Can we all agree that was the best like moment in the episode was him checking in on Rosita's lactation?
Yes. And then the other new idiot character, who I don't know the name of, asks him questions while he's trying to examine the satellite. And after he walks away, he mumbles, "Cutting into my 10 minutes."
Yeah, the guy that was fat last season, but he's lost all his weight, and now he's trying.
Yeah, the guy who was about to get laid with that attractive oceanside lady.
Yeah, that wasn't bad. But that's not how it works for the rest of us out there. But forget bearded fat guy that's now skinny. Talk more about Eugene. David, your thoughts on Eugene?
Seeing Eugene go back to being creepy Eugene,
yes,
and trying to, you know, see her while she's feeding her baby definitely brought back wonderful memories of him watching her and
Abraham.
Abraham, yeah, I had a brain fart. Have sex and like getting caught and later admitting that he was doing that. It's just, I love that.
I love watching you.
Right, that's just always a fun part of his character.
Yeah, he's a pervert. He's just unique, you know. He's Eugene. You can't stay mad at Eugene. He just likes what he likes, you know.
He's lonely and he's out there and hadn't found anybody yet.
I mean, he confessed his love to her last year and she rebuked him. So, you know, if he wants to do science experiments on her baby, then so be it. Measuring the baby's leg length and arm length and whatnot. I don't know what that meant or what it would do, but there it was. Nick, you have children. Do you ever measure their arms and legs randomly?
No. But then again, I'm not a doctor the way that Eugene True. Porter is, so I wouldn't have any cause to do such things.
That's a good point. Well, you wouldn't have any cause to do such a thing.
He had the feet, you know, the exact time logged out to warm the baby bottle, the feeding times. The man is damn near a pediatrician at this point, and yet continue to cast aspersions on his qualifications.
Well, and I will continue to cast aspersions on his doctoral qualifications, although I admire his commitment to the craft. There also wasn't as much King Ezekiel as I was expecting. Big fan of King Ezekiel, and I was expecting to see a little bit more of him on here.
I liked him better when he still talked like a king.
I think he does, except when he's around people that know he's not really a king. So,
is the kingdom still a thing?
No, the kingdom is dead, but I believe he's still.
So then what would he be the king of?
Nothing. He's just Ezekiel, but I believe he still talks in the royal form to those who want to maintain the illusion. But around Daryl, there's no point in him talking that way. Then again, I don't know. We fast forwarded so much, I couldn't tell you. What were you going to say, David?
I could have used more of him and Jerry scenes. I always enjoyed them together.
Jerry's great. Cooper Andrews is the actor's name. He's outstanding.
I have a thought idea for the show, though. You mentioned the lines, like if you cross the lines.
Yeah.
Do you think if they could get by using the Yin Yang Twins song, Whisper Song, could that... Do you think that would be allowable for them to cross the lines if they sang that?
Well, this was the first episode of The Walking Dead I think I've ever seen that didn't use a slow, sad acoustic song and instead used a funk song in the soundtrack. So I don't see why not, David. No, I take it back. I instantly thought of everyone's favorite episode, You're on Easy Street.
Oh, God, that was awful.
That was an actual good episode, though.
It was a good episode. It's just the song that's debatable. I continued to not understand the point of the characters of, and I'll be honest, I didn't know these were even their names, Yumiko and Magna, who were introduced last season.
I don't know who those people are.
Well, they are lovers, and they are, you know, she is, one of them is... Magna, the feisty leader of a small group of roaming survivors. And the other one is Yumiko, Magna's girlfriend, who is a proficient archer.
I don't know who these people are.
Well, no one does, because they don't get enough screen time for anyone to care about them. But yet they always seem to be there, having lines of dialogue, but yet not having characters.
Hey, what's up with Daryl and his Anne Frank-like new lover?
That's who I was talking about them earlier. Connie is her name.
Mm.
Anne Frank-like? How is she Anne Frank-like?
Greg, we do this at least two or three times a year. Let's just move on.
All right.
Have you never seen Clerks 2? Or have you just successfully
blocked everything about Clerks 2 out of my brain? Thank you very much. Except for that stupid donkey scene.
He's going to cornhole that ass. Anyway, continue.
I'd rather strut that ass, quite frankly.
Why can't you do both?
Well, yes.
Move on with this review of this bad episode of television.
Yeah, so
that's kind of what
we're getting at here from the tone of all of us. Is like the stuff that was there anything that you liked in the episode, Nick, besides Eugene?
That's it. Because the characters that were there that I recognized. So all the other, you know, because it was an episode that was entirely focused on character moments, right? Because there isn't really any action to speak of. Like you said earlier, the climactic action sequence is them dumping buckets of water on a fire, which is not the most exciting or thrilling thing on the face of the planet. No. So really, the entire episode is character focused, and so they're broken up into like one of three categories. Character moments involving characters I don't know who the fuck they are, so that does no good for me. Character moments involving characters that I didn't care about when I still watched the show, which just does no good for me. Or character moments that I like actively disagree with or just don't find interesting. Like, I'm sorry, the Carol thing, I've seen it done, this exact storyline over and over and over again, and it's diminishing returns. I don't have any interest in seeing it play out again for the 48th time. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with it.
Just in terms of she's not wanting to
Greg, be how people. Many times have we had her like threaten or toy with the idea of just striking out and forever?
Constantly.
And then she gets over it and she comes back to the group and she finds her place and she feels like she's at home. Then something bad happens. Then she leaves. And yep. It's this. They have been
You're
in
right.
a 5-year cycle with this character.
You're right.
The
Longer
same
than that.
Thing like when we talked about Morgan last week. On Fear of the Walking Dead, like, I just, if that's the only direction or idea you have for this character, then why is she still on the show? Like, if you can't write new angles for her, then just write her
the
off.
The problem is, Nick, it's all they know how to do with any of the characters.
I know that.
Which constantly cycle through these storylines. That was what was so refreshing last year, I think, is the fact that we got new characters that weren't the same people we had been familiar with, and these new characters had new perspectives and it gave the old characters something new to do that wasn't just go through a crisis of conscience, which all of them have been through 1,000 times on the show. But so far this year, it looks like we're going right back to same old, same old. And a lot of that waffling back and forth of emotions and feelings and all that stuff, it did leave me cold a little bit. I hate to say that because I'm so high on the end of last season. One thing I also wanted to bring up here, David, you and I were debating this Sunday night, and I still don't know if I've gotten a good answer on it, because I thought when Carol – there's a scene where Carol slits the throat of what I thought was actually one of the Whisperers, because the reason I thought that, no walker that I can remember in the history of the show – correct me if I'm wrong on this, Nick or David – no walker that I can remember has ever sprayed that much blood. That looked like a live person whose throat had been slit. Also, slitting a walker's throat doesn't work. We've seen numerous instances of a severed walker head that is still chomping and trying to bite humans. That's happened since season 2.
I also have a question once David attempts to provide you with an answer related to this.
So she slits the walker's throat and uses its spraying blood to put out the fire. which is so inherently stupid in the first place. But again,
is that what happened?
Yeah. Have you ever tried it, David?
Definitely not, but I wasn't sure that's what happened. I definitely saw her slit the throat and was weirded out by it.
Yeah, she was trying to aim the walker, or what I get, apparently it was a walker. I thought it was a human being, but aiming it at the fire to help it, to try and put out the fire.
I just thought she happened to kill it. I didn't realize that she had a point behind it other than to kill it.
I have a question, and this is actually one of the few areas where I need some clarification on, because you guys actually watched last season.
Sure.
All right, so The Walking Dead, as we've discussed before, yes, it's a fantastical premise with, like, you know, zombies walking around and the literal apocalypse and all that. But the appeal of the show, to me always, was character interactions. It was the grounded way of, like, looking at humanity and how they interact with one another when things go bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
So somebody explained to me when nuclear fucking weapons came into this. Because she randomly, like, in the middle, I didn't watch any of last season, didn't pay attention to any of last season, and then they're having a discussion about these borders, and Michonne's like, well, we can't because they have nuclear weapons.
I think it was
multiple questions. Where did they acquire a nuclear weapon? How are they planning on firing this nuclear weapon? Why are there nuclear weapons on a fucking supposedly grounded drama series?
Nick, I believe it was a figure of speech. I believe it was.
Then what is the nuclear weapon?
I don't know. I can't remember. That's the problem. I can't remember what their what leverage they have, except that they have greater number. I think they have greater numbers, and so that's their great advantage. But I think it was a figure of speech, like in Watchmen, when Nixon says, "We have the nuclear option." And it's,
but no, they literally had the nuclear option in Watchmen.
Well, they did, but they also had Captain Manhattan. They had Captain Metropolis, ironically enough, who's right here on the show with us.
It did.
But
what is this nuclear weapon?
No, I think it's a figure of speech, and I don't know what she's describing. David asked me the same question on Sunday night, like what nuclear weapon? I was like, I think she's just meaning that they have leverage over them, but I don't remember what that leverage is, other than they killed their friends and have greater numbers or
whatever.
Wouldn't
that be something if they had an actual nuclear weapon and then set it off, not understanding that it's going to kill them too? And then it finally ends this shit
That's
show.
A great way to end it. That's how I'd end it. I'd do that in a heartbeat. But yeah, no, so I still don't understand the slitting of the throat. David, did you have any time to think this over and come up with an answer?
No, it was a weird scene. Because there's no reason why she wouldn't have just killed it normally unless she was using the blood to put out a fire. Which, a whole lot. So...
Lord Almighty. So, David, there was actually an interesting accent that you premiered during our viewing of the show. I was wondering if you'd be willing to let the listeners in on it.
My daughter.
Oh, that was the worst.
Oh, David's alpha impression that sounds like an 1800s genteel southern plantation owner.
Maybe her voice would turn into that. I'd be good with it.
My daughter. God. Oh, Lord. All right. Let's get to our final thoughts on this episode. Disappointing. I'm going to come back and watch episode 2. Although I got to be honest, guys, I'm nervous about episode 2 because the preview looks like it's all going to be from the perspective of the Whisperers, which means it's going to be really slow-paced. So, and nothing is actually going to happen from a conflict standpoint. So, maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe I'm misspeaking, but I've got a lot less patience for their, especially after last season when I thought they picked up the pacing down the stretch when it counted. I have a lot less patience for their pacing right now than I used to. It really took me out of this episode. And so if you're on the fence, I hate to say this, but I would say just don't watch the season premiere, at least until a couple episodes pass and you can hear from us or from somebody that you trust whether the follow-up episodes are good enough to invest in the season. I was disappointed in it. Nick, what were your thoughts?
It sucked, and it just made me feel even better about my decision to leave this show behind.
David?
I'm really curious what songs they might work into this year, because that funk song was pretty cool. And at least we'll get more of that horrible accent that Alpha has. Not as bad as my impersonation, but, but we'll definitely get plenty of my daughter. Yeah. Oh, what if Sully came... And
yes,
with the daughter and Valverde.
Why isn't Sully on every show right now? I mean, Sully could save The Walking Dead single-handedly. He comes in, you know, he says, "You wanted your daughter. I had her in Valverde getting me a little beer with her." And he comes on there. He has, you know, they fight and all that, and they make up in the end. And Sully is voted king of the Walking Dead universe. And I could get behind that for sure. Fucking whore. Anyway, boy, yeah, this episode was disappointing, to say the least. Nonetheless, we don't want to get out of here without giving you a chance to let us know your thoughts on the episode. Tweet us at gphillips8652, at nickduke87. I will be back to watch episode 2 of this season. Nick will not. I'll let y'all know what I feel about it. David, how can people find you on social media, and tell us a little bit about what you got coming up on the Sunday Groove?
Well, they can find me Sunday Groove PTB on Twitter, And just today, I dropped a new episode with Tim Capel about 80s music.
Ooh.
And it was kind of our commentary on the 80s tournament that just finished the other day. So we talk all different styles of music. We have some very different opinions, and it was a lot of fun. So I've got that one that just came out.
Excellent.
You and I have one coming up soon.
Yes.
It'll come out in November most likely. And yeah, I guess that's basically it. So just listen to the show and reach out to me on Twitter and let me know what you think.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm always curious to hear Tim talk with you about music, to get some of Tim's, because he and I don't really talk about music much. We talk about wrestling and comics and movies and all kinds of stuff. So that should be a very compelling episode. And of course, you and I always have fun chatting music all the time, basically. So that'll be cool to do. Anyway, thanks for joining us, man. I appreciate you coming on and engaging in Walking Dead Month, which may be the last Walking Dead Month. We'll have to discuss in future years if we want to continue this theme month.
But there's a spin-off coming up, you know, that's going to be intriguing, I'm sure.
Oh, that's true. That's a good point. I hadn't considered that, Nick. What do you think about reviewing the second Walking Dead spinoff? Insightful thoughts, as always, from Nick Duke, my cohort over here. Anyway, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will have the rundown for you with all the big comic book news coming out of New York Comic Con and elsewhere.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the longest-running weekly episodic comic book podcast.
Place to Be Nation. I didn't have a burp built up that time, damn it.
Well, we hope you enjoyed all those advertisements for our cohorts here at Place to Be Nation. Nonetheless, we are here to bring you the news and notes in the world of comics. It's a segment known in North America as, ladies and gentlemen, The Rundown.
Welcome to The Rundown.
Well, Nick, a litany of news this week. We had New York Comic Con. And we've had a lot of related announcements to come out of this. And since it is Walking Dead Month, which will continue next week, whether that's a good or a bad thing, I'll leave to the viewers or listeners to decide, and the viewers. We got some Walking Dead news to report, appropriately enough. And that is that The Walking Dead has been renewed for an 11th season, with Lauren Cohen returning to reprise her role as Maggie. And she'll be a regular on the show once more. So, Lauren Cohen's kind of, unfortunately, I hate to say this because she's really great, but her attempts to kind of have a big starring career didn't really work out. Her show on ABC got canceled. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, I think was the name of it, and her movie, Mile 22, did not do as well as I think they wanted it to do. So she's back to The Walking Dead, and she's great. So I think it's a great addition back to the show.
Yeah, character I always liked. So hopefully this will, you know, help to reinvigorate the show a little bit more and continue it down what you and Greg or you and David have said is a positive path. So best of luck to her, Lauren Cohen, and to people who are still watching the show.
Indeed. But while we're talking about gory, violent shows, let's talk about an underutilized app, which is CW Seed, a free ad-supported digital network, which announced the voice cast of a brand new animated series, Deathstroke Knights and Dragons. It's a 12-episode series that debuts in the first quarter of 2020, and it stars Michael Chiklis, he of the S.H.I.E.L.D. fame, as the titular voice of Slade, a.k.a. Deathstroke. It features Sasha Alexander from Dawson's Creek as Addie, Chris J. Alex as Jackal, and Faye Matta as Rose, Griffin Puatu as Jericho, Asher Bishop as Young Joseph, Colin Salmon as my favorite, Wintergreen, and various other characters. Lady Shiva is going to be in it. The Hive is going to be a big part of it. Both Jericho and I'm assuming Rose is going to turn into Ravager at some point. So, great cast here for this Deathstroke show on the CW Seed. It's kind of surprising to me that they got an A-list, or at least a B-list actor like Michael Chiklis to be in a CW Seed show, given how few people, I think, utilize that service. Nonetheless, they also released the first teaser for this series, and Nick, I am sold. One teaser in was all it took for me, because this was freaking awesome. It looked like it played out like it was right off of the pages of Christopher Priest's Deathstroke run. And it was written by, apparently it was written by J.M. DeMatteis. The whole series was written by J.M. DeMatteis. Mm-hmm. I thought this was fantastic. What did you think?
I haven't actually watched the trailer yet, so I have no thoughts on that. Tell me this. Do we know the format of this yet? Because if I'm not mistaken, wasn't the Constantine CW Seed animated series like a series of like 10-minute episodes that then you could kind of edit together into like one continuous movie, yes, for lack of a better term?
I believe
so. Is this a similar thing?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, that's cool. Because that means that at some point I can sit down and watch it, you know, like in a relatively short span of time rather than it needing to be a real, you know, 12-episode, half-hour-long, you know, 5-6-hour commitment.
Right. Yeah, and I agree. And I really would, again, recommend you watch this teaser because I thought it was, for a dude that loved the Chris Priest run like I did, it was, it's a version of Slade Wilson that is instantly identifiable, and it's gory as hell. The action is great. So big, big, big fan of this. Gonna check it out for sure. Well, another animated series coming our way soon, courtesy of DC Universe, the streaming app, is Harley Quinn. And we finally have a release date for Harley Quinn. It is November 29th on the streaming service. Now, DC hasn't specified whether the entire season will be released all at once, but they have not done that on this platform yet. They appear to be committed to the approach of releasing one episode a week, like a regular TV series would be. Nonetheless, Harley is getting its start then. We both reacted very positively to the trailer for this show. Thought it was funny and irreverent, which is appropriate for the character. What are your thoughts on the show, Nick? Are you going to be checking it out once football season wraps up?
Yeah, I intend to. I'm actually excited about this one. And I think having it be, I'm assuming anyway, shorter episodes than the standard 1 hour for Titans or Doom Patrol or Swamp Thing makes me a little bit more likely to check this one out. But only time will tell on that. But this is definitely one of those things that goes onto the seemingly never-ending list of things I intend on watching one day.
Indeed. I know how that goes. Wrestling has – we'll talk about that in a little bit, but wrestling has really absorbed our time lately.
Mm-hmm.
Harley Quinn getting a Black Label title from DC aimed at adults. It is a four-issue monthly Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey title. Launches February 2020, and it is from a pretty familiar Harley Quinn team, Nick. Amanda Connor, Jimmy Palmiotti, and Paul Mounts. They are returning to the character. It's pretty appropriate. It'll be launching the same month as the movie comes out. So here's the premise. With Harley finally done with the Joker, she's moving forward with her life until she's beset by a rogues gallery of Gotham City's worst villains, the target of a $10 million bounty placed on her head by the Clown Prince of Crime. It will take the help of Black Canary, Cassandra Cain, a.k.a. Batgirl. Interesting. Renee Montoya and the Huntress to help Harley get to the bottom of why the Joker has turned Gotham's worst loose on her. Very interesting that Cassandra Cain is Batgirl here, Nick. I know it's Black Label, so it's probably not in canon, but
I would think maybe a prequel even. Like, this sounds like it's set in a time period right after Harley and Joker split, so this probably is going back a few years, I would think.
Yeah, pretty cool. We haven't seen Cass Kane as Batgirl in many, many, many years, so and it ties into the movie nicely, so nothing to complain about here, at least that I can find, Nick.
No, this sounds cool.
Well, one thing that I'm very interested to get your thoughts on, as everybody knows, Jason Aaron's iconic, decade-long almost run on Thor is coming to an end, finally. All good things, they say, must come to an end. And in his place is a brand new creative team of Donnie Cates and artist Nick Klein, who will launch a brand new Thor ongoing series in 2020, as announced during the Next Big Thing panel at New York Comic Con. Kate says, "Every book that I write for this company, I try to make the biggest, baddest book I can." He says that every Thor book should sound like Zeppelin. Well, I want mine to be like Norwegian black metal. So I don't like that, because it should always sound like Zeppelin, by God. But I definitely appreciate his vigor for the character. It will pit the God of Thunder against a new villain called the Black Winter. What are your thoughts on this new creative team, Nick? Are you excited to see what they do with Thor moving forward? What are your general thoughts? You're the Thor guy.
I know nothing about this artist to start off with, so I can't really evaluate there. But and again, I have never read anything from Donnie Cates, but I know that Donnie Cates is the kind of the hot name at Marvel right now.
Yes, he is.
He's kind of the guy who could seemingly take on pretty much any project he wants at this point, and the idea that he wants to take on Thor as his next big project is pretty exciting. Because when somebody has their pick of characters and they pick the God of Thunder, that always excites me a little bit. You know, you always say you never want to be the guy that follows the guy, and he is going to be following the greatest Thor run of all time, but it seems like he has a passion for the character and probably some cool ideas. So willing to see, check out what he's got going on.
The cover, I will say this cover by Olivier Coipel, I'm not a big fan of this because it looks too much like John Romita Jr. for my taste, but that's just me. As you know, I'm not the biggest JR Jr. guy in the world. In any event, we're also getting another relaunch of a beloved Nick Duke property, and that's Star Wars. And Marvel is relaunching Star Wars come the blah, 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 blah. What is the date on this? This is beautiful. Newsarama's automatic playing videos are just wonderful. It was announced during Comic-Con. The new title, Star Wars, from writer Charles Soule and artist Jesus Saez, I almost called him Jesus because of The Walking Dead, will transport the title to the time period between The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. So, Nick, your thoughts on this Star Wars relaunch? I won't read it, but will you?
I'll probably check it out at some point. The Star Wars title that launched when Marvel reacquired the rights to the comic several years ago has entirely taken place in the gap between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. And so I think anyone who was following that series, as I was for a time, and kind of lost track of it as I have done with most, or not most, all weekly comics, we all knew it had a definite endpoint. You know, there was only so long you could take it, and they've made the decision to go ahead and end that volume over there, but they're going to pick up with arguably a more interesting time period, which is post-Empire Strikes Back, because now you're going to have Luke fully on the path to becoming a Jedi, seeking out Jedi training, seeking out building his own lightsaber, I would assume, will probably be a major storyline at some point. The search for Han, you'll have Lando on board now as a full-time supporting character. Yeah, this has always been a period of Star Wars history, to me anyway, that is ripe for exploration, so I'm excited about this.
Very good. Now, do you think that, you know, you're talking about looking out training, do you think he'll seek out John Matrix's training?
I hope so.
That's one Marvel property, by the way, that has never been relaunched. Marvel once had the comic book rights to Commando, and they've not once relaunched that in all these many years. Now, granted, their rights probably aren't there anymore, but I'd love to see Marvel do a stab on it. But give me a Jason Aaron and Esad Ribic Commando run. How great would that be, Nick?
That would be pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
Well, anyway, that's all we got for the rundown this week. And moving on from that, we have nothing because reading and watching. I got nothing, Nick. Do you have anything for reading or watching?
I got lots, actually, we promised you. We promised the people, Greg, that our stories were coming back, or we want to save that for next week.
I haven't watched either of them, but if you want to, you can go ahead and get into it.
We'll save them for next week since we haven't really talked about what our schedule is going to be. But our stories are back. Supergirl, the debuting Batwoman. So I've got thoughts. But
give me your one word review of each. Without that way, you don't spoil anything.
To borrow a phrase from Andrew Chandler Fraser Garner, but not to use it in the way that Andrew Chandler Fraser Garner would use it, I'm going to say, all right.
Very good. I will watch them this week at some point, probably the weekend at this point, due to many, many wrestling commitments. But yes, I'm looking forward to watching them. Actually, Batwoman snuck up on me, Nick. I was telling you this story. Sunday night, I was settling in to watch Walking Dead, and my mom called and said, hey, Batwoman's on. And I said, no, it can't be. It hasn't started yet. And she said, no, it's on. It says it's new right now. Is this legit? And I was like, I guess it is. And I looked it up, and it was. So it really snuck up on me. I wasn't expecting it this early. But, you know, The Flash is back this week as well, and Supergirl. So there's just... We're really going to get into nut cutting time with regards to our schedule, Nick. So
we really are. Yeah. It's going to be tough.
And I don't even want to say it. I'm not even going to talk about it. We're not going to talk about this other. Where I was about to mention a sports thing that we don't need to talk about right now, Nick, because it may be rendered moot by the time we.
Oh God! Let's not even
go there. All right. So what that leaves us time for is I'm looking around in this luxurious studio, this high quality, as you can hear on the audio here, the highest technical quality studio going around, and I look over at this high tech industrial clock that we have, and it's telling me something right now, Nick. It's telling me that wait a minute, what, hang on, I've got a sheet of paper here that's coming out of the... Oh, my God. Folks, the ticker has reactivated. This just in, Ho Ho Loon's biography, still available on the award-winning WWE Network.
Go.
Oh, my God. Whew, glad we know that. But you know, Nick, that's a great transition because it is time for the Wrestling Minute. And we teased this last week, folks. Last week was... the biggest week in North American pro wrestling in a long time, maybe the better part of a decade and a half. And why, you ask? Well, great question. Well, we had the season premiere of Monday Night Raw. That doesn't really matter. We had the first two-hour NXT on the USA Network. We had the debut of AEW Dynamite on TNT. huge thing for wrestling. And, of course, we had WWE making its return to network broadcast television on a weekly basis for the very first time with the debut of Friday Night SmackDown on Fox. So, if it's okay with you, Nick, I propose we just skip talking about Raw. It was fine, but there's not much really to discuss. New announced team, new set. Thought the new set looked good, but not much to discuss there. You okay with that?
Yeah, I'm good with that.
So let's move on to Wednesday night, where the Wednesday night wars began. And I think the big story, the A-list story here, was the premiere of Dynamite. I thought it was a really good show. Not perfect, not flawless, but I didn't want it. I didn't need it to be. And in a way, it sounds crazy. Obviously, you want a perfect show, but it was kind of nice to have a return to the Nitro days where there were some imperfections. There were some things that didn't go exactly right, but it also had this feel of unpredictability, didn't it? It had this feel of anything can happen that's been missing from WWE for many years. And I think most important of all, it looked like an A-list wrestling promotion, right?
The production values were outstanding. I mean, I think having help from TNT Sports in that regard undoubtedly helped because it looked professional. They had some people still that are employed at Turner who know how to produce pro wrestling. Now, you can laugh at that and make WCW jokes if you want to, but visually, the visual aspect of WCW was rarely their issue. Did they have production blunders? Yes, but it never looked badly shot or badly edited, I would say. So that helped. That certainly helped in that regard. And I think what a lot of people inevitably did last week was they compared the show quality of Dynamite to the show quality of NXT. And what people need to realize is NXT went all out. They gave you high-profile matches. They essentially gave you a takeover on free television. AEW's approach was a little bit different. They weren't using this as something that was heavily that was meant to blow off a lot of things the way the NXT show was. This was simply supposed to be a sampling of what you can expect from their television product and get you to come back the next week. NXT felt like a lot of things were happening, a lot of things were ending. This felt like a lot of things were beginning.
Yes, I totally agree. I thought, and the big thing for me, Nick, I was worried a little bit going into this show because I remember when TNA went to Monday nights and tried to restart the Monday Night Wars, but there was just such a clear, stark difference when you would watch Raw and when you would flip it over to Impact, which show was cleaner, which show was better produced, not necessarily because of the style of wrestling that was being presented, but because of just the production values. And it was pleasant to me to see that Dynamite really did remind me of Nitro in a lot, in all the best ways. I've missed that in my wrestling life for the last 20 years. So for me, I'm very excited about where this is going forward. I thought the pretty much all of the matches at least delivered on some level. The main event angle I thought was great because I love stables and main roster WWE appears to be allergic to stables. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited to see where it goes moving forward.
As am I, but nonetheless, a big, huge week for all wrestling fans. So
NXT,
we the fans, we're the victors here, not AEW. We win.
Yes, absolutely. Because what we got as fans, in addition to a really great premiere for AEW, was an even better episode of NXT, as you alluded to. The takeover quality NXT show that I mentioned this to you, Nick, was probably in the running for the best 2 hours of wrestling TV that I've seen all year. Certainly on par with some of those G1 shows that I watched on Access. It was exceptional. It featured a contender for NXT Match of the Year. Probably tough to win it with some of those Gargano and Cole matches, but a contender for NXT Match of the Year with Matt Riddle versus Adam Cole, which is probably, I know it's definitely my favorite Matt Riddle match. And it's up there for my favorite Adam Cole matches. I thought this was probably the new favorite for TV Match of the Year. What did you think?
I would agree with that. It was an outstanding match. Actually, the only match from that episode of NXT I've seen, because it is, again, the middle of football season, and I am woefully behind.
Anyway, kudos to our buddy Jason Ayers and the whole crew there at NXT for putting that show together. And we got to talk about the premiere. And this is an episode I know you haven't paid close attention to because I was there. But
I got to catch the back half of it.
Friday Night SmackDown on Fox, making the premiere, did a monster rating for WWE, the most viewers of a WWE show in many, many years. But in fairness, they busted out the big guns. They started the show with The Rock, who still...
And they were also, again, on network TV, which is a lot... I mean, people don't understand how much the increased level of penetration they have there, even compared to cable. I know we live in the golden era of cable, but there's still something about being on free network TV.
Yeah, and the they led off with The Rock. It's always great to see him. He is a level of charisma and star power that, frankly, doesn't exist in wrestling. But that's no knock on the guys now, because really it's only existed a handful of times in the history of wrestling. So it felt like a huge mega movie star coming in and making an appearance, and he did his best to make Becky Lynch look like $1 million. Had a great little segment with Corbin. Probably the highlight of the show, being honest.
No, undoubtedly the highlight of the show, yes.
We had Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon had a nice ladder match with each other. Shane took some vintage dangerous Shane bumps, appropriate blow-off to that angle. I thought that was good.
Yes. Right Kid died, all
right
that.
Right Kid died, yep. I missed the women's tag match, unfortunately. I'm sure it was good with the horsewoman. Mm-hmm. And other than that, I thought the last hour of the show made a couple of miscues. in particular, miscues may be a strong word, but in particular, I was put off by the Kofi and Brock match. Not because I knew Brock was going to win. I had no problem with Brock winning. I had no problem with Brock winning dominant. But I just feel like after Kofi had that long of a reign and went over that many people and was presented that strongly, and that he's representing an audience that has been traditionally marginalized, at least in many of their eyes, by WWE and by wrestling in general over the years, that he and they deserved a little bit better than being wiped out in, what was it, Nick, 7 seconds?
Yeah, Kofi charged him. It was essentially the I don't remember the who she fought, but it was essentially that Ronda fight from a few years ago where somebody came at her with a flying knee and she just dumped her in armbarter.
Yep, Kat Zingano.
That was essentially the same. Yeah, it was the same fight. I mean, the match was laid out in that exact structure.
The Rousey and Kat Zingano fight. And I understand the argument that this can happen in MMA. It happens in combat sports. I have no problem with the finish happening in a vacuum. But this is not in a vacuum. There's context matters, especially in pro wrestling.
You have been the one of the most vocal supporters of the Kofi Kingston title reign, so I was interested to hear your thoughts, and I'm not surprised they are what they are.
Yeah, I think that this was, and the reasons for that are multifold. It's not just that it's not a matter of one of my favorite wrestlers got squashed. I've seen that a million times. You know, I didn't have as big a problem with Daniel Bryan losing to Sheamus as I had with this. Because there was an angle to that, you know? He got distracted by AJ and it set up their breakup and all that. At least there was that. This was just Kofi's not in Brock's league. And and you can tell that story over the course of maybe 5 minutes of Brock beating the hell out of him, but at least give Kofi a chance to be a fighting champion. And we've seen guys kick out of the F5 now this year. So I really didn't like that. That left a bad taste in my mouth. And I'm a huge Brock fan. You know that. We've talked about that on the show. I think Brock is unlike anybody else in the business. But I don't know. And then, of course, the show ends with the big Kane Velasquez angle. And I'm interested to get your thoughts on that, because I'm somebody that knows a lot about Kane Velasquez because I follow MMA very closely. What were your thoughts as a non-MMA guy? Did you like the angle, not like it? What were your thoughts?
Kind of down on it, honestly, because, one, I'm not really – like, I know who Kane Velasquez is on a very basic level, but I'm not a huge – like, I can't claim to know the in-depth history of how their previous fight went, other than I know that Kane beat Brock. I understand that. But also, like, to me, does it not make Rey Mysterio look a little worse? Like, Rey Mysterio has to go out and find somebody else to fight his battles for him? Like, it just – I don't know. I mean, like, I get why they're doing it. I don't have a huge issue with it, but – It didn't land for me, I guess you could say.
One of the interesting things that I've seen that I actually agree with, because I understand why they did it, and I think on some levels it works, because there is that mainstream cred that you get. Everybody knows that Kane beat Brock for the most part. Most people know that anyway. I think you got a couple of issues with Kane, who doesn't have a pro wrestling physique. He's never needed one in MMA. He's never had one in MMA. But, you know, it is a traditional body business, so I think that's going to be a problem for him. He doesn't cut great promos, so they have Ray cutting his promos for him right now. But then, like you said, I think the other aspect here is, for anybody that watched Raw last night, Rey Mysterio cut one of the best promos of his life. An impassioned, this sort of like, I don't know where he's tapped into this, but this sort of older, you know, dad, family man Rey Mysterio is cutting some great promos in 2019. But ultimately, it's being served by a match. I came out of that wanting Rey to fight Brock, not wanting to see Kane fight Brock. So we'll see how it pays off. Maybe Kane will surprise us and deliver. But I'm like you, man. I thought that wasn't the way I wanted to see the first SmackDown on Fox end. That said, hell of a lot of effort on the show. Hell of a good thing for the business moving forward. Hopefully they can retain some of those viewers they got and as they present their regular roster and not just The Rock and Kane and Tyson Fury and all these celebrities they had in the audience. You know, we'll get the draft next week. I'm really excited about that. Give me real quick, Nick, one guy you would want to see move to SmackDown. And, well, I mean, let's just assume that the brand split was still a thing. One guy you want to see on Raw, one guy you want to see on SmackDown, or girl.
Oh, I don't know. Let's say, let's swap Bayley and Sasha. How about that?
Not bad. And I actually think that might happen. Reignite the Charlotte and Sasha feud on SmackDown and do some Bayley.
I think it's had enough time to cool off a little bit. I think it makes a lot of sense.
I can totally get behind that. I would like to see Ali move to Raw because I think Paul Heyman would give him a good shake and a fair shake at things.
The thing about that is, though, is there enough room for he and Cedric both to fill similar roles?
True. Good point. Good point. And then I would like to see well, actually, it's weird because both of the ones I was going to pick were Raw, because I'd like to see Chad Gable on Raw as well. I don't think he's gonna last on SmackDown if he stays there.
Shorty G,
indeed. And then maybe I think Seth Rollins moving. Well, he's the champion, so he's not going to move to SmackDown. But it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. Change of scenery would probably help him a lot, even though it would put him back on the same show as Roman.
Oh, Nakamura to Raw would be a outstanding move.
I like
Paul that. Heyman would get it.
I like that. I like his new alliance with Sammy. So yeah, good stuff there. That's the Wrestling Minute, folks. And that, by George, I think that's it. I think that's it for the show tonight, right?
Well, it normally that would be it, but once again, we're gonna end this show as we do each and every week. But actually, before we even get to that, Greg, God, we almost forgot one other thing we haven't done in a while. We haven't had a fantasy football update. So why don't you give the folks out there a fantasy football update?
Oh, I can't do that, Nick. Unfortunately, I've got a crippling case of gout, and it's preventing me from accessing my fantasy football account.
Well, this week, I'll have you folks out there know that the in our fantasy football league, the Prestige Show, which is, I believe that's your team, is it not, Greg?
Yes.
Do you know who you faced off against
this week? I don't. I couldn't tell you, Nick.
Well, you faced off against the Hilton Hulkamaniacs, who, I'll be damned, happens to be my team. And are you aware of the outcome of that contest?
I understand that I won the game, my Prestige, on account of Baker Mayfield did not put in one of the worst quarterbacking performances in the history of fantasy football.
Actually, no, that's inaccurate, because that's exactly what happened. Your team lost the game as a result of Baker Mayfield putting on one of the worst fantasy quarterbacking performances of all time. So you fall to 0-5, and I am on the path to the playoffs. So there it is.
I may be 0-5, Nick. I may be 0-5. I don't know that. I haven't checked. But if I am 0-5, I'm 0-5 with dignity. I'm 0-5 with pride. And I'm 0-5 with draft picks for next year.
Well, speaking of playoffs, Greg alluded to earlier a sporting event that we dare not even bring up. So we're not going to bring it up. But let's just say we're hoping that the next few weeks, Greg, can take us back to a magical time, in our lives. That time, of course, being the year of 1995. Hulk Hogan is the reigning defending WCW World Heavyweight Champion. And something else is going on in the Deep South that brought a smile to our young hearts. And on the country music radio stations at that time, this was the number one song in America. Take it away, Jim Ross.
Well, folks, it's like this. Spent $48 last night at the county fair. I throwed out my shoulder, but I won her ass that teddy bear. Now, Teddy DiBiase, that was our nickname for him back in the day in Mid-South. We called him Teddy Bear. I won him for my date that night at the county fair. A lot of people don't know that about him. Oh, Teddy would play ball with you now. Teddy would do some things, some kinky things from time to time. She's got me saying sugar pie, honey, darling, and dear. I ain't seen the Braves play a game all year, if you can believe that. Inexplicable. I'm going to get my ass fired for a fourth time, by the way, if I don't get some sleep. My long-lost buddies say that I am getting in too deep. Nick, are you snorting cocaine on the other end of this line? Because that's what it sounds like to my ass. But I like it. I love it. I want some more of it. I try so hard. I can't rise above it. I don't know what it is about that little gal's loving, but I like it. I love it. I want some more of it. Now, my mom and daddy, they tried to teach me courtesy. They gave me a sack and a baseball bat and taught me courtesy. But it never sank in till that girl got a hold of me. Now I am holding up umbrellas and opening up doors. I'm taking out the trash and I'm sweeping my floors. Crossing my fingers and counting every kiss. Praying that it keeps going on like this. And you know why? Because I like it. I love it. I want some more of it. I try so hard, I can't rise above it. I don't know what it is about that little gal's loving, but I like it. I love it. Folks, I want some more of it. Now, here's where it gets funny now. I've got to wash my truck and dress up and pick her up to watch TV. And then she sits her ass down on the sofa to watch a little Mid-South on WWE Network. She'll move a little closer. She can't get enough of me, old JR. But I like it. I love it. I want some more of it. I try so hard, I can't rise above it. Don't know what it is about that little fucking gal's loving, but I like it, I love it, and I want some more of it.
Our traveling, Bad Boys.